This is the MagicWordPodcast.com.
Hello, this is Scott Wells for the MagicWordPodcast.com. This week's episode is brought to you by the New England Magic Collectors Association, who is sponsoring the annual Yankee Gathering. I should say the biannual Yankee Gathering. It happens every 2 years, coming up in Nashua, New Hampshire on November 7th through the 9th. It's not too early for you to start making your plans, booking your hotel and your transportation in order to get out there. This is going to be an amazing time, and we're going to talk about that a little bit here during this podcast when we take a commercial break. But also, for more information, of course, you can always go to the Magic Word Podcast, where you can click on the convention guide information, and there will be about a 10 or 12 minute audio that you can listen to Mike Mayo, who is the vice president of NAMCA, and I talk about that. Well, this week we are also announcing the winner of the contest from the last couple of weeks we've been running, that Richard Wiseman had offered a grand prize. I think it's pretty super that he's offering this to everybody in the entire world. It's not limited to just the UK or the United States. He's going to pay for the shipping, and he will personally autograph this to you. So there are two copies of this that were awarded here this week. I'm going to announce the winner's names on the backside of this podcast. Well, this week we're going to travel to, to New York, and I was going to say Las Vegas. And this is a gentleman who spans the, the nation, but actually the planet, with his performances, where he was working for 37 years on cruise ships, and of course with doing his big stage illusion show, and has worked with Chris Angel. He was featured in the Mystica show there in Las Vegas. A lot of really cool stuff we talk about. We have been friends since back in the early 80s. We talk a little bit about our friendship going back to the days of the Magic Island very early on. Anyhow, I know you're going to enjoy this podcast and get a lot out of learning something about some more in-depth information about the magician who is really a mover and shaker, not only a performer, but behind the scenes then as well. As I said, consulting for Chris and many others that he works with right now. Plus, of course, working with the Houdini Memorial. He's been involved with the SAM for a long time, recipient of numerous awards. So please welcome my guest here this week, Mr. Joe Devlin, here on The Magic Word. Today we go to Brooklyn, New York, where we're going to be speaking with a friend of mine. Actually, it goes back for quite some number of years, and I hate to say how long, but when we used to work at the Magic Island together back in Houston so many years ago. But he has been a New York native for a long time, having worked way back in the days with mostly Magic, and I believe that was Imam back then. I think it was. And then, of course, the Magic Townhouse, and he had worked in Atlantic City, had worked on cruise ships for like 37 years and done a lot in Las Vegas. In fact, we're going to be talking about his work with Chris Angel and working in his Mystica show and his influence, I guess, by Ricciardi and so many other things. This guy is just amazing and one of my favorite people, and apparently is for a lot of other of the top people, as magicians as well, who use him as a consultant on a regular basis because of his knowledge and creativity. And I admire him so much, and I'm so glad to actually, after nearly 850 episodes, finally get together because our schedules just haven't matched. Here he is, Mr. Joe Devlin. Hey there, Joe.
Hi, Scott. Nice to see you. Thank you for having me. Yeah, we do go back quite a way, Scott, since Magic Island, Houston, South
Right.
Free West Highway.
Wow. So what a good memory. Yeah, good numbers.
84.
That's about right. And I still have your 8x10 glossy, and I love that. I remember you had this bow tie that had like little rhinestones around which I had my wife copy and make something because I thought that just looked so glittery on stage. But you also had a mullet. I didn't go that far with the mullet.
I had a mullet and a mustache.
And a mustache. You look like a porn star, you know.
I look like Yanni.
Yanni. That's exactly like Yanni. Who it was.
And if you recall, my first dove, I used three in my act, my first dove would appear with a rhinestone collar on also.
Oh, so I vaguely remember that.
Yeah, by Gene Elmo. Elmo Magic Supreme used to sell those. And when I saw it, I said, I got to have it.
Did you have some pictures taken, some promo photos of you holding the dove with the collar?
No, oddly. I don't have any photos of that. Some people may. I mean, lots of pictures come up throughout the years of me at Mostly Magic, performing Magic Townhouse with Dick and Dorothy Brooks.
Right.
I don't know if you know. By the way, Richard Cohen sends his regards.
Oh, great guy. Yeah. He's the Coney Island magician out there.
Yes, he is. An archivist, a historian.
Mm-hmm.
And he's terrific.
Lovely guy. I really like, well, right back to him. When you see him, say hello for me then, too.
Okay. I'll probably see him tomorrow, along with George Schindler, our dean for the SAM.
Be sure to say hello then to George as well.
I will.
Love that gentleman. He's got to be, what is he now, 92?
95.
Five, okay.
And sharp as a tack.
He is. It's just he looks young, like 92. Yeah.
He attends a lot of these podcasts and Zoom shows.
He does.
And he performs. You know, he still does card tricks and the card to watch he loves. So that's sort of his trick on the Zoom things. But George is a dear friend. I've known him for as long as I've known you. And I've gone to his house maybe for 35 years. So he's a great mentor, a great magician, and a real inspiration.
Well, I think it's great that he's still performing and as sharp as he is, and the fact that the way he keeps up with technology and everything. I know that he has been very involved, of course, with maintaining the SAM, the Houdini gravesite on behalf of the SAM. And of course, he's the dean of that. But you're right, back during COVID and since then, seen him on all kinds of Zoom meetings and everything. He's always involved.
Well, George has been going to the gravesite. We do the Broken Wand ceremony once a year for the Parent Assembly. I was just the president, 23 into 24. I just swore in our new president, Guy Kroll. And now I'm on the national board for the Harry Houdini Restoration Committee, me and Dorothy Dietrichs, the chair. Mm-hmm. So we try to work it out. I mean, it's not an easy task to make repairs in New York City cemetery, but we're trying.
Correct me if I'm wrong, but I just saw something I thought recently on Facebook in which they were talking about the poor maintenance, or it was starting to fall apart, or there's some issues with it now, or cracking.
There's cracking. There's one particular crack we're concerned about, and we'd like to get it done this summer, because if water gets in there and it freezes, it could potentially crack a piece off. Mm-hmm. And if someone finds that, they're probably going to take it or throw it out. So we want to make sure that all the pieces stay intact. You know, it needs some cleaning, but that's the main crack that we're concerned about.
Well, there is a Houdini fund, isn't there, or something that actually goes towards the repair and maintenance?
Correct. The National is very good about it. We got a lot of money allotted to the repair. We just haven't been able to organize it yet. Mm-hmm. We tried, but there's a gentleman who takes care of the cemetery. The cemetery keeper is difficult to reach and so forth. He wants things done his way, and we only found people to do it another specific way. So we're trying to organize it, but hopefully it'll get done.
But we
do have allotted money for that.
Good. Well, it sounds like it's in good hands with you guys knowing exactly what needs to be done.
Yeah, we hope so.
That's great. You were talking about George and being a mentor, knowing him for so long. He was perhaps the first lecturer I heard back in the 70s sometime. And I still do a copper silver that he had taught that was in his lecture notes.
Oh, that's amazing.
Yeah, it's just, it is amazing. It's a great trick. It's very straightforward. It's the presentation and not the method that is exciting, I think, you know, about that gives a lot of opportunity. Anyhow, everything that he says and does, it seems like it's gold. So you're lucky to have grown up and have him really as a mentor.
Oh, absolutely. And he does a great chop cup routine. He mm-hmm. lectures on that. He put notes out on that. He also was the creator of showing a bill, wrapping it, putting a ring over it, and making a coin appear with a folding coin.
Oh.
But it was sort of his trick where he just showed a bill, made a little tube with someone's borrowed ring, clapped his hands, took the ring off, undid the bill, and there's a coin.
Sitting on the bill.
Which was pretty brilliant. You know,
yeah.
A great routine. Amongst other things. I've been in George Schindler's World of Illusion. He would tour this illusion show, and he would put acts in there. And I was one of those acts. He also discovered Jeff McBride was in that act when he was a little boy up in the Catskills.
Wow.
So very interesting. A lot of history here.
So how long ago was that you were in his touring illusion show?
Oh, it must have been mid-80s to early 90s.
Okay. Yeah.
And then I did a tour with a magician called Richard Robinson. I don't know if you're aware of that name, but he went by Robinson Wizard. He was sort of the father to put magic on the internet before people even knew what the internet was.
Yes.
You know, so an amazing magician, very underground, but a real great magician.
He is underground, I guess. He's passed, hasn't he? It seems like he did die, but he's underground from the standpoint of the magicians who, you're right, don't know about him today, but he was the first, and I know exactly what you're talking about, because he had all these amazing videos that were teaching magic back at the time, which before we started thinking, okay, well, that was exposure. I guess if he did that now, of course, it was different, in which now you can have a paywall or you can use YouTube to, or whatever, private windows and whatnot, but it was different back then. But he had hundreds and hundreds of amazing videos. And really, a great teacher, well taught.
There is a zip drive that I believe is still available.
Jim Sisti sells that.
Jim Sisti.
Yep.
And it's got everything you'll ever want to know about Robinson Wizard and magic, the history, how to perform, costuming, makeup, everything. I mean, it's extensive, so it's well worth pursuing. But I don't know. I guess you can contact Jim Sisti. Jim was a good friend of his.
Yes, he was. And I'd worked with Jim also on the Restaurant Magic newsletter he used to put out.
Right,
I had
designed
the banner graphic that he had used. And then I was in the book and when he had published the hardback, because I did a lot of restaurants back then as well. But the point is, I did a podcast with Jim in which we talked about, it's called A Brief History of Magic on the Internet with Jim Sisti. And so he kind of goes back to all the different things that we had. There was another thing called Magic. There was another one that was, not the gibber say, I'm trying to think anyhow, the Grimoire. And different things that you and I had used back then. It was the only way to kind of interact with people literally around the world, I guess, through dial-up.
Yeah. Well, we did quite a few shows. The show with Richard Robinson was called Illusion Show. And I still have a beautiful poster, and our promo photos were taken by, he knew a lot of people. He was in the rock business early on. He was a promoter, musician, manager. So I believe he was the first to bring Blondie into popularity.
Wow.
Yeah.
Wow.
Deborah Harry. So yeah, he was a giant. I mean, he's been in music videos, and we created the show. Basically, he plugged me in. He would do his thing. I would do my thing. But it looked good. It worked. And then an Atlantic City contract came up for me, so I couldn't tour with him anymore. So that was unfortunate. But that opened my world to Atlantic City, which is on the East Coast here. You know, it's like a casino town on the beach.
I want to, while we're on that, let's talk about that a little bit. Which hotel were you in there on Boardwalk?
I started in a tiny room, maybe 80 seats, called at Bally's Grand.
Uh-huh.
And downstairs was the big theater, the Grand. So I would do my show upstairs. It was basically a little stagette with a bar and some seats. And I did my whole show there. And then the same producer asked me if I wanted to continue after the show in the Claridge. She got the Claridge Hotel. It was a real jewel box of a theater. A lot of guys played there. Brett Daniels. I forget who else, but a lot of magic shows went through there. But before that, at the Grand Theater downstairs from this little room I was in, Blackstone's playing, Harry and Gay.
Hmm.
And I walked in one night to do my show, and there was a reserved table. And I'm like, oh, I wonder who that's for. So when the lights went down, this big team entered and sat on the table. Turns out it was Harry Blackstone and Gay, and all the people from downstairs came up to see my show.
So your show
was a great honor.
Yeah.
And at one point I stopped the show. Obviously I introduced Harry and I say, Harry, how am I doing? And in that voice, he's like, absolutely wonderful. So that was a great thing. I still have the reserves thing. This was Harry Blackstone's reserve seating paper. So it was just neat. It was just neat. But I've known, I worked with Harry many, many times. So we struck up a little bit of a friendship. Now I know Gabe pretty well. Right. So it's neat. You know, you get to know these people like yourself for years. Sometimes you don't see them for a while, but right. You know they're there. And I think that's a big part of success, or the secret of success in magic, is planting seeds. Those seeds sometimes sprout 20, 30 years down the road. And next thing you know, someone's calling you and, oh, we have a show you'd be perfect for, you know. And just because you're a nice guy, that's one of the biggest secrets, I think. Also, just be nice to people, especially in your profession. There's no room to be difficult or, you know, talk stuff about people. It's very important.
Well, that's true. And also not to burn any bridges. If you have a difficult situation, right. You should still talk nice about it. Or if, even when people come to me and other magicians and say, what do you think of XYZ magician, name, you know, whoever happens to be the celebrity at the time. And there are some magicians who might badmouth them, saying, well, they don't deserve to be on TV, or they shouldn't be in Vegas, or it's a bad show, or whatever. No, you should just build them up. It's like, oh, you know, they're the greatest. It's absolutely both, it's good for both of you.
It helps you. It helps your career.
Sure.
You know, it's funny you bring that up. I was, you know, I've been with two assistants in my life. One was Kim early on. I met her in 1986, and we were never married, but we were together and we worked together. We built our show till 1998, 99, when she broke my heart. You know, she met someone else. That was that. But at that point, I was.
He was looking for love, not for a magician. It sounds like.
Yeah. You know, I always sort of use the shoehorn to fit the girls into my show. But at that point, I started working alone for a bit, and then I would hire girls, and the show suffered. And at that point, I was let go by the cruise line, and I had been that with them for years, and I didn't get mad. I didn't say, you know, I don't need you more. I said, thank you. Thank you for all the years. And within 6 months, they were calling again. So I could have easily burned that bridge, like you say, but I didn't. And sure enough, I worked for the next 20 years for them. So it's interesting. Anyway, within a year, I met my wife, Bronwyn. Mm-hmm. We were together 16 years. She proposed to me. She's like, we woke up one day. She said, I planned our wedding. I'm like, wow. You know, let me hear it.
Yeah. So, okay. Am I involved?
Yeah. Sadly, she passed 8 years ago in July 1st of 2016. But so I've been on a wild ride because I built a show, an illusion show, big illusion show, and then lost it all. And had to reinvent myself. And then my wife, we rebuilt the show. And then she passed away. So, I mean, I'm not saying magic is more important than people, but it's very difficult when you're in this career and you use people that you have relationships with. Mm-hmm. Sometimes it doesn't always work out, even though there are great positives to it.
Sure.
You live together. You're always creating together. You know, you can just stare at each other and know what the problem is or what you want to change to. So it's very interesting. But right now I'm in the process of reinventing myself. I always go back to my roots, which is my act. I don't have birds anymore, but I work with rings, silks, earring. I keep doing, you know, earrings keep appearing. So I'm trying to still keep in that matador character.
Right,
Matador Magic.
Yeah,
so it's going well. I mean, I became a 40-miler right now. Mm-hmm. A 40-miler, you know, where I was a globetrotter, now I'm a 40-miler for now. But I plan on rebuilding. I still have all my equipment. I have all my props, and that's what I am, an illusionist. So I want to do big stuff.
So you're looking at reinventing yourself then a third time and going back out with a big illusion show if you find an assistant.
Correct.
Okay.
Correct.
Okay.
Which is not as easy as it seems.
Well, perhaps you can advertise for one right here. People who are listening, who might be an assistant, saying, hey, I'm going to go out and work with Devlin.
Well, they would have to come to New York. They would have to rehearse. And then they would have to be available.
Right.
And that's the tough part about the magic scene.
Well, going back to your roots you were talking about, and I mentioned earlier about, of course, the Magic Townhouse and Mostly Magic. Those were a couple of venues that really didn't have a large enough stage to do big illusions at the time, right?
Correct. I started the Magic Townhouse. I pulled up. It was my last 6 months of high school, and they offered an internship program. You can work and get credit for those last 6 months. So I called up Tannins, and Tony Spina answered. And I said, can I intern at your shop? And he said, no, we don't use interns. I'm like, okay. So I called the Magic Townhouse, which was uptown. And Dick answered. And he's like, yeah, absolutely. Come in. We use interns. So I went there, and it was a magical place. That's where I first met Jeff McBride. He walked in with big hair and a brass belt buckle with a fan of cars. He must have been, I don't know, 18, 20. Yeah. And my first day there, I thought, wow, I'm a pro. You know, I was, I don't know, not even 18 yet. And Dick threw a book of how to make balloon animals and a bag of balloons in my lap and said, learn how to twist animals. It'll be the most important thing you'll ever learn in your career. And it was for years. You know, I would do kids show. I had like 20 minutes of magic, and then I would make balloon animals for the rest of the time. But I learned a lot. I learned a lot there, because at night there were the shows. During the day, we ran the magic shop. We sent things out. So it was an instrumental time to watch Dick perform. Dick Brooks.
Brooks,
was a great magician. You know, and Dorothy was a female Houdini, you know, the escape artist.
Yes.
Did a bullet cache. She did upside down jacket. So whatever help they needed, I was there. And then Mostly Magic years was great. I mean, I auditioned. I started on a Wednesday night. I moved to Thursday. I moved to Friday. And then I was closing Saturday night. So, but there I rubbed shoulders with giants like Frank Garcia, Al Goshman, Tony Slidini, so many. Professor Bobby Baxter. Mm-hmm. I don't know if your viewers know that name, but amazing, amazing man.
And Harry Lorraine.
Harry Lorraine. Peter Samuelson, the list goes on and on.
Right,
Imam himself was an absolute genius. He did Indian magic, you know.
That's a name that is only known, it seems like, for people on the East Coast, and I know the name also, but because it was so long ago, his name seems to have been lost in history.
It's a shame, because he was absolute master of what he did. Not only technically, but He was an artist. He was an actor. You know, when you felt it, you felt his magic, the way he delivered it, the way he paused. He wasn't afraid of silence. They say even for comics, you have to get over being uncomfortable with silence. Those beats of silence are just as important as your patter or your music. Very important to the dramatic pauses and so forth.
That's good advice. Before I forget it, you had mentioned about getting him throwing you a bag of balloons and saying, learn how to do balloon animals. It reminds me of that old joke about a guy who went to work in the circus, and he was tasked with cleaning up after the elephant. He was shoveling and scooping and everything. And they said, why don't you quit that job? And he said, what? And get out of show business?
Get out of show. I love that joke. It's great. What?
It's like, get out of show business? These balloons? You know, what do you mean? Get out of show business?
Well, it was very good advice at the time. I mean, he taught me slow, I started doing 5 minutes in the kids show. They had a professional magician who did their kids shows. Ray Nardini was his name. And he taught me parts of his show. And I would come up as a special guest and do, you know, diminishing gloves or something for the kids. Mm-hmm. But I learned from that how to put together a kid's show. And I've been working since 1982, you know, just doing magic. I always say my parents were too kind to stop me, and I was too stupid to know it couldn't be done. And sure enough, and then you have little moments like Magic Island. I got called out of the blue, and Scott Hollingsworth. I understand they're going to,
They're putting the band back together again. That's true. Yeah, Scott's going to be the new entertainment director, and the latest is that I've heard is they were waiting to get the permit for a new elevator. Apparently the one they had didn't fit and they had to order another one. It had to be shipped in from wherever, it had to be custom built. Anyhow, that's the last I heard, but they're still talking about having this in place by October, no later than November. Now I keep hearing it being pushed back and pushed back. Of course I was tasked with being the entertainment director when I was living in Houston. And when I moved to Austin, that's when they called Scott Hollingsworth and said, "Hey, could you come back and join the team?" So he said no, but he changed his mind. Yeah. So I'll try for a couple of year, couple more years. So yeah, it's going to come back.
I hope so. Because, I mean, that's another place. I spent 2 weeks with Chip Lowell, you know, performing on the same stage. I spent 2 weeks with Matt King, you know. So these are amazing friendships that I cherish, you know. People go on to great things. So it was a very defining time, not to mention, you know, Frank Price, was it? The judge,
right.
And Jamie Salinas.
Right.
And a lot of guys there, too. That was a great experience.
Houston had, and still has, a great array of magicians that are very professional. And I've always enjoyed being with them and learning from them. And I think the Magic Island was part of why magicians were so good, is because that Scott Hollingsworth always brought in good magicians. And sometimes they'd lecture for us, for the most part. You remember we used to have like a Tuesday round table. We'd have lunch and everybody would come in.
Sure.
Whoever happened to be working that week, Scott would bring him in. And then the rest of us would kind of sit around. We'd have round table. And I remember, boy, just everybody who was coming through, and even people who were passing through town. I remember James Randi was at a trade show and he came in and joined us for lunch one day. And I remember him showing me his at the time it was an American Express gold card. And it used to be that they would have your profession. They would give your name and then underneath it, whatever it is, let's say dentist or whatever. And his said, James Randi, conjurer.
That's fantastic.
I thought it was kind of cool.
It's fine. You know, I must have been, I don't know, 15. I got Randy's card and I called him out of the blue. I didn't know anything about magic, but I wanted to do an upside down straitjacket escape, which I, to this day, I've never done. But he stayed on the phone with me for an hour explaining how to do it. He said, "I don't recommend it," but just like that, he picked up the phone and spoke with me. So it was that's my story with James Randi. Very unusual. Unusual.
Well, apparently back in the day, he was pretty good about picking up phone calls, because back when Steve Shaw, before Banachek was, when he was Steve Shaw, I guess, he'd called him, and that's how he got involved with the Alpha Project, just kind of calling him out of the blue and said, "I want to be one of these kids." And he said, okay. Just, he picked up the phone and said yes.
Banachek is, I love the guy. Great guy. I got to know him very well from working in Las Vegas with Chris. Mm-hmm. He was one of the guys, you know, so.
Right.
Great experience.
Yeah. So there were some good people that you'd grown up with at the same time. You'd mentioned Eric DeCamps and others who you were kind of, everybody was gaining their own spirit, I guess, and their own, building their own character and learning which direction they were going to be going, of whether it was close-up or stand-up or comedy, or in your case, then illusions. Cruise ships seem to be a natural place for illusionists to go to. Today, it seems like when I've talked with some cruise ship, I haven't worked a cruise in a long time myself, but when I last talked with some agents, they were saying they're really looking for someone who has smaller shows and they don't have to haul as much stuff. Do you find that's the case?
I was with Holland America 27 years and they were more than happy. It was three guys calling illusions at the time. It was me, James Seelan, and Greg Fruin.
Greg Fruin.
So,
okay.
Yeah. And they had no problem with it. To this day, I mean, I'll be honest, the last time I hauled illusions was prior to my wife passing. So I haven't, I don't know. I don't know the answer to that. But I know at the time, which wasn't that long ago, they would send the truck to my warehouse. I would load it up.
Right.
Next time I saw it was on the stage on my night, you know. So, and they would pay for everything. But they would expect you to stay out for several months.
Correct.
I mean, longest I've done is 4 months on one ship.
Once they've got that investment to begin with of picking you up and getting you there, keeping you on the ship is not going to be an expense because they've already got the room and the food and everything else already there. But I just was curious if cruises had changed dramatically, I guess, since you, of course, I would think that it had when you you first went into it. Did you just call out of the blue to somebody in a cruise ship, or did you talk to Ron Wilson out at the, in the castle or somebody? Or
no, it was two guys, and you'll probably know them, Steve Rodman here in New York, mm-hmm. and Russ Merlin, who's out in Las Vegas now.
Yeah,
Russell Feig. He did his act on The Tonight Show. I don't know if you remember that.
I don't remember.
He was
that.
Sort of a mechanical robot. But they started, they put out a cattle call for acts to send videos to book. So they put out my video. They videotaped all of us. They hired a school and we were in the auditorium. They shot whoever wanted to be shot. And they sent these videos to Bramson Entertainment here in New York, which was one of the original cruise ship agencies from the 50s. I mean, it was F. Abramson, then Jim Abramson, then Linda Raff, who I worked for primarily. But they hired me, and here I was. I was green as anything. I had my kids show with me, basically. It was I called it a family show, but it was what the same thing I do for kids. And they put me on a 7-day cruise on Home Lines, an Italian cruise line. They had three ships, the Homeric, the Atlantic, and the Oceanic, which I was on. Next thing I know, I'm leaving New York City under the Verrazano Bridge and going to Bermuda. Mm-hmm. And I was so green that I remember that first night setting up my act in case they were going to call me. And they didn't, you know. The next day, they said, this is your schedule and everything. But it was an amazing experience. And I was alone at the time.
And now, a word from our sponsor, the Yankee Gathering 2024. Yankee Gathering 2024, that's the New England Magic Collectors Association, is going to be coming up in Nashua, New Hampshire, November the 7th through the 9th. I have with me right now Vice President Mike Mayo, who's going to tell us a little bit more about that. Hey there, Mike.
How you doing today, Scott?
Fantastic. This looks like it's just going to be a really great convention. Beautiful location, beautiful time of the year to get up into the Northeast and learn a little bit about our history of magic. So tell us a little bit about some of the people who are coming up and some of the speakers, performers.
Yeah, absolutely. This is our 20th gathering. So we're pulling out kind of all the stops on this. I think we have the most lecturers and presenters we've ever had at a gathering prior to this. Mike Caveney is going to be there. Mike Rose, Dean Carnegie, George Schwartz, Bill Kalush, Jonathan Neal Brown, Michael Claxton, Tom Ewing, Ice McDonald, quite a list. 3 days filled with programming. And capped off by a gala show at the end of the convention. We have Matt Roberts, Kevin Bethay, Jonathan Neal Brown's going to be performing as well. So it's a really jam-packed convention, and we're looking forward to it.
And not only going to be having just the evening show, but it'll be including dinner in your registration. Is that right?
Yeah, absolutely. Yep. It's a big, nice sit-down gala dinner. The show on the stage, it's always supposed to be a nice time. We joke around that we're the social convention.
And one of the things that I think is exciting is you're going to be going to nearby Salem, Massachusetts, and taking a bus tour of everybody over to see what?
We're going to the Peabody Essex Museum in Salem, Massachusetts, good old Witch City. The Peabody Essex Museum is putting on an exhibition about spiritualism and its connection with magicians and mediums in the early part of the 20th century. There's going to be all kinds of memorabilia and apparatus that's going to be there. And also, when we take the trip, people are going to get a chance to go out and have lunch and walk around downtown Salem. And then when they get back from Salem, we actually have Anna Thurlow, who is the great-granddaughter of Marjorie the Medium. And she's going to be doing a talk on the Houdini Marjorie seances. And she's never been in a magic convention before.
Wow.
So we're really excited to have her there.
That's quite a coup. It sounds like just going to be a great time. So for people who want to attend and find out more information or they can register, where can they go?
You can either find us on Facebook at the New England Magic Collectors Association, or you can go to NEMCA.com. That's NEMCA.com. And that has all the convention information, registration, the hotel. We are in a brand new venue this time around, gorgeous Sheraton, Nashua. It's going to be a fun time. I can't wait to see everybody there.
Well, I wish you best of luck. I'm sure it's going to be a fantastic convention. And again, that's going to be November the 7th through the 9th in Nashua, and you can register at NEMCA.com.
And now we continue our conversation with Joe Devlin.
So later on, how did you come about getting to do the show in the Bahamas?
Same guy that hired me in Atlantic City called me. He said, I'm producing a show at the Crystal Palace Casino in the Bahamas. So in Nassau. So would you like to do it? And I was, I had a full show. He simply supplied the dancers and some of the choreography. His wife was a choreographer. So I was plug and play. I was easy. I would bring my equipment. I knew how to use it. Mm-hmm. And that was it. And it became my show, Mystique, it was called. And it ran for about a year and a half. But the Bahamas is very difficult. I mean, you don't have people walking off the streets. You have to hook up with the cruise lines because they bring in thousands of people and you hope to sell tickets to those patrons. But the problem is they wouldn't go to Crystal Palace. They would go to Atlantis. You know, Atlantis had millions of dollars in promotional budget. So all the cruise lines would take them there. But we had enough, but we never filled the theater. But it was a fun show. It ran for quite a while.
Was that something that you had four-walled, or was that something that the hotel and the casino sponsored and they just paid you X dollars?
It was a four-wall deal, yeah.
Okay, so you were having to sell the tickets yourself, so I see what you mean. Yeah. Yeah.
So it did all right, but I was flying home for my vacation to get married in Delaware. So I was given the choice. Do you want to leave your equipment and return? Or do you want to ship your stuff home and return? Mm-hmm. I said, we'll ship my stuff home and return. Because put it this way, in the Bahamas, the first day we went on deck, the office, the producer's office was on the stage right, and the doorknob was broken. So they called maintenance, and the producer said, can you change my doorknob? A year and a half went by. The day we left, that doorknob was still broken. So I wasn't going to leave my, you know, $200,000 worth of equipment there. So we shipped it home. And at that point, the show died and it went away. But I came home. We got married. My wife in the Bahamas towards the tail end started pitching our wedding to a wedding story on TLC. They used to have a TV show called The Wedding Story. And they bought it. You know, they're like, yeah, we'll do it. So lots of questionnaires, lots of meetings, and they sent the cameras to my wife's home in Delaware, to her mother's home, where we got married. But her mother was in absolute shock, and she just didn't want this. But it was the best promotion we've ever gotten. We got recognized in Puerto Rico. We got recognized in Times Square. We got recognized in Hawaii. So it was an amazing time to have this one-hour special about us getting married, the magic couple.
Wow, that's better than anything they're doing nowadays with America's Got Talent or Penn and Teller Fools or anything on television where you just get a few minutes. That was a whole hour just about you guys.
Awesome, yeah. We're really great TV. I mean, I did the thing, the last thing project I did with Chris was Magic with the Stars, which was, you know, it was a, I don't know if you saw it, Scott, but it was celebrities competing.
I did. They had two different things. It was Chris and Lance and then some comedian.
Correct. Lonnie Love. And they were the judges. I, along with Joe Monti, who's been my brother since we met.
What a great guy. Yeah, I love Joe.
Right around the corner, by the way.
Be sure to tell him hello for me also when you see him.
I will. I will. I grew up in this building. I own it now. But I grew up in a six-family apartment building in the heart of Brooklyn, New York. And I decided, we almost sold it last year, but I bought it for my sister. We decided to, or I decided to keep it. So I met Joe around the corner. There was a magic shop, and I must have been 10. And he walked in with his mom, his friend's mom, John Benz. And we've been friends ever since. But anyway, Joe, to go back, Joe was the consultant. I was consultant. We were coaches. So we were on screen. We were, you know, they would show us teaching these celebrities. And I don't know if it was lasted one season.
One season, right. Second season. It was one and done. Yeah.
Yeah. But it was fun. I mean, teaching Donny Osmond tricks, you know, I never thought I'd be next to Donny Osmond.
Were there times in that show, Joe, where they just didn't get it and you're going to say, okay, let's scrap that. We're going to teach you another trick. I'll show you something else.
Rarely, but I think celebrities, you know how people think about magic. We take it very seriously, but lay people sometimes are like, oh, magic. Yeah. So I think the celebrities came in thinking, oh, magic, you know. And then they realized this is serious. This could, I could really look bad on camera, you know. So it was intense. It was intense training at their point. But they surprised us. They did great, you know. And we swore them to secrecy and so forth. But it was interesting to watch these celebrities slowly absorb that. Holy God, I really have to study and practice this.
Right.
You know, so
as I recall, it seems like that each of them were taught like three different things. And so there are three different segments and two people competing against each person, like in close-up stage and mentalism or something like that, basically.
And the stage effects were taught by Chris. We're talking about Chris Angel.
Right.
He taught them his effects from his show. And then, I mean, what Chris would come into the warehouse and we had all the tricks that we had chosen lined up. And we would perform them for him, and he would select which tricks we should use with the celebrities and which celebrities. So it was a process. It was a really long process. And we try to mix up some mentalism with some sleight of hand, some card tricks.
Right, right. Now, I know that you had worked with Chris on other kinds of things. In particular, you were on stage in the Mystica show, because the Mystica was something that did not have Chris except just his voiceover, basically. It featured, like, Mike Hammer was MC, and you were there, and several others who were doing different things. And you were doing some Ricciardi routine, because it was kind of talking about history, because I think they had one fellow who was doing water torture escape or something.
Well, we have to go back a bit. Chris called me and said, I'm putting together a new show. And the theme was about his life. And it was just his story. But he wanted a running thread, pardon the pun, which was a white handkerchief that told a story. He was very passionate about Doug Henning. He owns Doug Henning's Dancing Hank and the Jar and everything. So he wanted this Dancing Hank throughout the whole show.
Mm-hmm.
And so it had to fly in, it had to dance, it had to move, it had to go across the stage. So he hired me as that consultant to create these systems, which I did. And the most difficult was to have a Dancing Hank within the little house that popped open and became the little boy's room, Chris, when he was little, and then have it dance around and fly. So that's what I was hired for. And then I would do some of the puppeteering in the early part of the show. And then the show changed a little bit. And he said, I have three people that I admire. And that's Harry Houdini for escapes, Cardini for cards, and Ricciardi. Would you do Ricciardi? I'm like, you know, tell
You'd seen Ricciardi as a child.
My idol, or one of my idols, absolutely, in Las Vegas. We put in the show. I did the Dakota chair into the box, just like Ricciardi used to do. It was amazing. I mean, it's nothing like Ricciardi. This is so high tech, Chris's system, that it was beautiful. And yeah, it was a great honor. I wish the show lasted longer. It was a great experience.
Each of the people, including yourself, I mean, the fellow who was doing the card manipulations and everything were just perfect. They were just fantastic. I mean, I can't say that one was better or worse than the others. I mean, the level was, everybody knows how funny that Mike Hammer is, and everyone was at that same level of just being excellent. I thought it was a well-done show, and I'm surprised it didn't last any longer.
It was a great show, but unfortunately, I forget his name now. Chris's partner, Franco.
Drago.
Franco Dragon. That's it. He passed away suddenly.
Yeah.
You know, after the show was created, he was a lot of creation with him. He was a brainchild, mm-hmm. or the creator, basically, of Cirque du Soleil. Created the concepts. And he sat there in the theater along with Chris for like 6 months, just creating a Mystica, which was a great show. It was an amazing, amazing story about Chris's life. And Chris did come out every night and introduce himself. And that went on for quite a long time before, sadly, Franco Dragone passed away in Egypt. And it didn't feel right anymore, I guess.
But I mentioned that you had seen Ricciardi, although you didn't know him. But as a youngster, you had gone to see his show in New York, I guess.
My idol. You know, I was on that stage. Yeah, everyone would parade. Once he cut his daughter in half,
yeah.
and the entrails were just hanging there, you could smell the ether of what he put her to sleep with, mm-hmm. and blood everywhere, him in a lab coat. And the audience would parade up on stage and walk past this dead person, you know, magically dead.
Right.
And I handed him my program, and he took and signed it. And there's a drop of the blood on my program, oh, which cool. I love. You know. But he would warn the people. He said, the show is now over. You know, if you care to leave, don't worry. Go. You enjoyed yourself. But if you want to see this, please stay. You know, but he would warn them. Anyway, I thought he encapsulated the man of mystery, his performances, his style. You know, maybe he was so intriguing because no one had ever seen this kind of flamenco-esque
right.
bullfighter, you know.
You put your finger on it right there, like a flamenco dancer or a bullfighter in which that he points the way he does, and his stance and his choreography were so beautiful.
And his focus. I mean, the audience was there, but then he put the wall up and, you know, his focus was all on the magic. You know, he didn't right. care if the audience left at that moment. You felt that.
Yeah.
You felt, you know, especially his levitation. And it was just probably one of the greats of all time. I mean, David Copperfield will say, Siegfried and Roy will say, or would say it in the past, sadly.
Yeah. yeah.
But a lot of people, Chris Angel admired Ricciardi very much. As a matter of fact, the time I was in the Bahamas, rumor was because Ricciardi, you know, got scratched by a big cat, mm-hmm. a tiger, or a leopard, I'm not sure. And he got an infection. And anyway, he died of gangrene. They had to amputate both of his legs.
Wow.
And
I didn't know that.
A lot of the bigger equipment, because he was playing the Bahamas at the time at the Merv Griffin Resorts, was left behind. His family only took the smaller stuff. Mm-hmm. So rumor has it his bigger equipment was there. Rumor still has it that under the stage that's there now is still his crank for the levee that he used to do. And I asked around. I became good friends with a magician down there called Mr. Unique. He loved magic, but he would build everything himself because he didn't know to order, you know, things. And, mm-hmm. But he said, I heard of a guy who used to work at the theater where Ricciardi was, that once a family left, the broom and his harness for the broom suspension walked out the back door. So I researched it and I found it.
Wow.
And I bought it home in my equipment because that's one of the main reasons I wanted to fly everything home. And I held on to it for 7 years, and it was authenticated by Ricciardi's son through Levent. Levent, had me send him pictures, and he showed it to Ricciardi's son. He said, yeah, that was our broom and harness. So eventually I sold it to a private collector. But yeah, great honor to have that in my hands.
Was that something that inspired you to do the guitar suspension?
Yes.
Tell me about that. So.
But, you know, because my character is very flamenco-esque, again, like a bullfighter. As a matter of fact, the reason I call myself the Matador of Magic is a reviewer in the Staten Island Press when I was in Atlantic City said, Devlin has the air and confidence of a matador on stage. I'm like, wow, that's it, the Matador of Magic. So I got very lucky, a lot of luck, because my character fit my my style, it fit my my music, and then I created magic to fit my presentation of Spanish. I was very cognizant of the colors, what I was using. You know, everything was red and blacks and golds and, you know, fiery.
Right.
You know, a Spanish act, I mean, think about it. You're using capes, you're using fire, you're using roses, you're using swords.
Mm-hmm.
It just fit. Right. Anyway, a flamenco guitar. I said, I'd love to do a flamenco guitar suspension. And we were going to have a platform made and everything. And then driving to Billy Schmill, who was Wellington Enterprises. He's mm-hmm. an illusion builder here in Garnerville, New York. I said, I got it. I don't want it unless we get rid of the bass and it's in the guitar case. So I took it to Billy and he built a masterpiece. You know, I carry the case out. I put it down. I open, pull out the guitar. I move a stool over. I put the guitar, the girl's resting on it. And then I raise her feet. I open the lid and I recline her feet on the guitar case. And the first moment of magic, I mean, that's pretty magical. But I stomp my feet like a flamenco dancer and the lid would close.
Mm-hmm.
And that's the first time they see her sort of three-quarter suspended. And then the rest, it was just beautiful. And it all came apart. It all moved. And it was featured in Magic Magazine. And Levent wrote a beautiful thing about it. And it's been said to be one of the most beautiful pieces of magic.
Is that something that you have sold to others? Is there anybody else doing that but you?
I did not sell it, but guess what? The first time I played China,
now everybody's got it over there.
It got knocked off, and I've seen in catalogs. Just so people know what I do have a photo of it early on me performing the. But that's it. That was the way yeah. she was suspended at first, and then
well, be sure and send me a copy of that for those people who are not watching the video portion of this. That I'll post it on the website for the blog.
I will do that. And I was very fortunate. And then I created an illusion called the corset, which looked like a giant arch. Mm-hmm. And there were two boxes, one stacked upon the other. And the girl would get in and her arms would come out, her feet would come out the bottom, her head out the top. And it was hanging on chains. So I would crank her up. So it was a stretcher. And then I would cinch her. That's why I called it a corset, because mm-hmm. there was fabric hiding the center of her body.
Right.
And then with a sword, I would slice the fabric and the bottom box would walk away. I rarely use the walk away part because it looked a bit funky. So uh-huh. I would just move it away. But you would have her upper torso just hanging there, dangling and completely movable.
Wow.
And so that was quite a successful illusion for me. So I always tried to create things that looked Spanish, looked sometimes sort of nautical, piratey. And it was, no, I have another picture of it, which I'll show you. But that was the illusion of the corset.
Oh, I see. Yeah, I've not seen that before. Hmm.
Yeah, it's one of a kind, original, built.
Yep. Be sure to send that copy to me also, please.
I will, of course. Then my Hindu basket was custom made for me, and I did a color change. I would use, instead of fabric to hide the girl going into the basket, I would use her skirt, her ruffly long Spanish.
Oh, that makes sense.
And you read a skirt, and then when she was supposed to reappear, I would spin the red skirt around. It would turn green, and it was a color change. It was inside out color change skirt.
Yeah.
Which I had made, and she would come out all in green. So little touches like that made a world of difference. I mean, memorable. I think people remember in photographs. They don't remember fluid. So every move you do on stage as an illusionist or anything should be sort of a picture. So people take those snapshots and they remember something important.
That reminds me, of course, of the Le Grand David show because David Bull and Cesario would do things in Tableau and then they would stop as if that you could take a picture, but you don't have to except taking a picture with your mind because you'll remember that particular moment. Nothing else. No one's moving. And they did that frequently. They would just kind of stop. And I think as you were talking earlier about the importance of pauses, it's also important that you take a moment to stop and let it sink in, let people realize what they're actually seeing.
Well, you see a lot of the younger guys, they just keep moving and talking, and it drives me crazy because people, it's already a special experience that it's even, they're even at a magic show. So the fact that you're in front of them is good enough. You don't have to, not good, obviously you have to do more, but you know, those moments that are sorely underappreciated by the performer, that they are seeing something truly special at that moment. You don't have to give them more special things, even though you should, but do it thoughtfully.
Right, right. Wow. Well, it's you've spanned a number of decades of inventing and reinventing yourself and doing different kinds of things, certainly. And it sounds like right now, if you don't go back out with an illusion show, you've got a career then with consulting, not just for Chris Angel, but I'm assuming there are others then as well who call on you from time to time.
Yeah, absolutely. I just, speaking of Joe Monte, I just helped him fool Penn and Teller. That's the three-card Joe.
Yep.
I mean, I was out there in Las Vegas with him and, you know, we worked on his patter, his timing and so forth. So,
and he's been doing that for years and years and years, but you kind of helped him refine that to make sure it would fool him.
Yeah. I mean, you sometimes you need that eye, you know, I've been gifted with creativity, you know, my ADD is constantly going, but I've been gifted with creativity and I think outside the box. I'm very, very difficult to fool. Mm-hmm. You know, the last time I was fooled was the Statue of Liberty and that, you know, making that disappear. That was a long time ago. But, you know, I search it out and figure it out eventually. But I think outside the box. I think quick on my feet. So I guess that's important as a consultant, just to have heavy knowledge of different techniques and how you can apply them. And the only way you're going to know that is if you were a worker for decades. You know what you can get away with. You know, you can get away with everything in front of an audience. They're so, like I said, so enthralled with things. They don't even notice if you reach inside your box and pull out a load. You know,
right?
They don't know. They don't know what's coming. But obviously, it's best to refine. But we want to impress our peers, you know, that's important to all magicians.
Sure.
But to a lay audience, give them an experience. You know, magic is a tool. They want to experience full out. You know, I always say about magicians, they're so busy copying the Mona Lisa. And most of those copies are awful. You know, they're not... artists, the Mona Lisa already exists. So why would you copy the Mona Lisa you're going to do it poorly? You have more of a chance of creating your own sloppy artwork, being successful at that, than you are copying something that's been done to perfection. So very important to think outside the box, like I said, and create your own thing, you know, something so different. That's if you think about the first of any kind, Elvis Presley, the Beatles, Madonna, all these people were sort of the first of their kind. And that's why they're huge successes. Mm-hmm. You know, Lance Burton, Siegfried and Roy, we can go down the list.
Right.
Giants, Chris Angel, David Blaine, David Copperfield. They're all the first of their kind, Penn and Teller, you know. So, yeah, don't copy them. Get inspired by them, you know. I didn't copy Ricciardi. I was inspired by Ricciardi.
Right.
You know, even though I did perform his rice and bowl trick with the rice bowls in the canister, I did that for a long time. I just loved it. Even though the audience is so confused during that routine that it's like, they don't care. You know, they're watching some guy dance around in tight pants. That's all they care about.
Especially the women.
Yeah. Who knows?
That's right. Well, as we wrap up over here, the name of my podcast is called The Magic Word Podcast. And so I always like to ask my guests what it is that is important to you. Now, you can kind of summarize what you just said. I mean, if I would have shut up earlier and just stopped right then when you were talking about the importance of that, that was just pure gold. But what would you say, not necessarily a word, but kind of just kind of in a sentence, or what would summarize would be?
Modesty, humility. Do not take yourself too seriously. Right. You're on this planet for 2 minutes. Mm-hmm. You know, you're not going to fool anyone. No one's getting out of here alive. I mean, we just lost 3 magicians. 2 you might know, 1 you may not know. He was a club member here, Rene Clement. He's been a magician in New York forever at our parent assembly. Mm-hmm. It saddens me very much. We lost David Oliver, a controversial figure in the world of magic. Mm-hmm. Sadly, and sadly, we lost Bill Rauscher, you know, very important magician, author. He's written numerous books. Just like
that book he wrote about John Calvert was still one of my favorite books.
Absolutely. Yeah. There's an experience. Roger Dreyer from Fantasma Magic hired me to perform for John Calvert's 100th birthday here in New York. So that was amazing. And I sang happy birthday to him, you know, and I made a candle appear, and he gave me a big hug. And I still think of that, because when he hugged me, I shook the candle and wax fell. And I think it went on his beautiful tuxedo, but nothing was ever said. But yeah, that was a memory.
Wow.
Anyway, thank you, Scott, for having me. I hope I was a little bit of help in inspiring people. It's been an amazing ride.
Certainly you have been inspirational, I'm sure. You know, a lot of the different things you were saying, not only the wonderful stories about your life, and I think that's what's important for our archival purposes, but I just like talking with you as a friend. I mean, the last time we were together backstage in Chris's show, it's been a while back. I see you from time to time and from place to place. But
sure.
As you said, you're not going to be making it to Magic Live here this year, but I'm sure I'll be seeing you down the road somewhere else. And that's a great thing about magic. We do kind of cross paths.
Yeah.
And we have we pick up our friendships right where we left off, as if nothing has changed in time. And so you haven't changed. You're still that handsome man you've always been, and a very creative guy.
So are you. Well,
thank you.
Or we might see you at Magic Island. Who knows?
Who knows? Might be back there then again, too. That's right. So with the Magic Word Podcast, that was Joe Devlin, perhaps better known as Devlin. This is Scotty out. Thank you very much, Joe, for being my guest here this week. And equally, but really, perhaps more importantly, thank you for being such a good friend for so many years. You're really great, not only as a friend, but as a magician and everything you do. Thank you for what you have given us here this week. And I'm sure everyone will have gotten a lot out of this one as well. So I want to thank you, the listeners, for tuning in from week to week. And I also want to thank particularly those who are the friends of the Magic Word, the ones who have given their financial support. I mention that now because of late here for the last couple of weeks, we seem to have had a couple of donors who, for whatever reason, have had to drop off. And so we could certainly use your financial support. Again, I say if you have not given then yet, either in to donate or to pledge on a monthly basis, whatever that you could afford would be greatly helpful to keep this podcast going and pay for our numerous expenses we have, including going to conventions and hardware and software, paying for the domain monthly, and et cetera, everything that we have here in order to bring you this delightful content from week to week. And so we'll appreciate if you just go to themagicwordpodcast.com. There's a link there that says become a friend of the Magic Word. You can even watch a video, which I'd recorded a few years ago, and it's no less important now than it was whenever I had recorded that. That is of asking in the reasons why that we need your financial support. So I'm appealing to you then now to give what you can as you can. And if I see you perhaps at an upcoming convention, I'll be attending a couple here very soon. If you want to just hand me some cash, that's always fine too. And you can become a friend of the Magic Word. Or if you are someone who already has been a supporter and want to re-up your annual donation by handing me some
cash there as well. That, again, goes a long way towards helping to keep this podcast going. I also want to congratulate the couple of winners whose names have been drawn for the prize that was offered by Richard Wiseman. Again, the book is called Magic Your Mind Happy, and he has two copies of that. And so we had a lot of people who had signed up for this contest. And the reason, obviously, is because it was open to everyone in the world. And it is a hard physical copy of the book. And because it's Richard Wiseman, after all, he's the guy who wrote the David Copperfield beautiful book that was illustrated by photos from Homer Leeuwag. Anyhow, you know, he's a great author and a great guy. So thank you for signing up for the contest. Well, enough of that. Let me tell you who the two people were whose names were drawn. And those people are Mike Camlett and Paul Hampson. Congratulations. I will notify Richard that your names have been selected, and I will get your physical addresses and get them to him so this way he can mail those copies of the books directly out to you shortly. Thanks again for participating and for entering the contest, and I suggest for everyone else, if you will, please just subscribe to the Pod Letter. That's our weekly newsletter. That way you're the first ones to know about these contests when we do have them coming up, and also reminding you, if you have not yet signed up for a contest, to go over to the blog and sign up there. So I do appreciate you signing up for the Pod Letter and learning what's coming on from week to week. Thank you very much. So if you will just, again, like, subscribe, and share, tell your friends about this, please help spread the word, the magic word. Let everyone know about this podcast, or maybe some perhaps in parts of the world who have not yet heard about this, but should, because I think it will help everyone and help your magic to grow and become a better magician through some of these great stories and advice that we have from all the hundreds and hundreds of magicians who have given us their time and their words. I will also mention next week, I'm going to be attending, I mentioned a couple of conventions coming up. One's going to be Abbott's Get Together, so I will be there in Colon, Michigan. So if you are there, I hope to see you and chat with you a little bit. If you are a listener, please come up and say hi, and I would like to chat with you for a little bit. And following that, I'll be going to a much larger convention. I'll be going directly then on to Las Vegas, where I'll be attending Magic Live. So if you can't attend one or the other, or both, you will always be able to hear daily convention reports that I'll be posting. So I've got a lot of things to do ahead of me. So I'm looking forward to seeing and hearing from a lot of you, and also to giving you some of the sights and sound behind these conventions that are coming up over the next couple of weeks. And while I'm at those conventions, hopefully I'll have some chance to sit down and to record some more in-depth episodes with some of the magicians who are in attendance. So until next week, stay well, get booked, and remember to be modest, be humble, and don't take yourself too seriously. Remember that we're only here for a few moments. This is Scotty out.